Good morning. Paul Andrigo here, Toronto Real Estate Unfiltered. This particular podcast is one that I've been working on now for quite some time. I would probably say more like months, even though the planning stages of a podcast for me usually happen in a couple of days. Sometimes they're on the spot, but in this particular case, this one's been a very hot topic for quite a while. So the issue here is whether to rent or whether to own in retirement. Now, I'll preface this podcast by saying that it isn't just about retirement that you have to think about. You actually have to think about this. If you're 20 now and you are going to be in Toronto or the GTA or Ontario for that matter, if you think you might be in the next 10 or 20 years, this applies to you. For those of you who are retiring, because I know and work with so many of you, I know, generally speaking, what your patterns are. Many of you have established lives, and you do not want to necessarily, you know, up and leave the country. Many of you don't want to move to the U.S. for obvious reasons, and you choose to stay within, let's say, you know, an hour or two of the city, or downsize, you know, from the family house to a condo, or an hour or two out of the city, that kind of thing. This is what this discussion is going to be about, but it's also based on, again, a lot of research that's done by people who know a lot more about this stuff than I do. So the main thing that I've been talking to a lot of people about is the recent story about the rents going up 3% for a TCHC, Toronto Community Housing Building, at 585 King, I believe is the address. I'm going to put a link to the story in my podcast, so you'll be able to see the whole details there, and you'll hear the story from one of the renters there, and it's a senior renter, and the thing that hits me is that there are so many people who've been working hard their whole lives, preparing themselves for retirement. And it's gotten to the point now where for a lot of people, just to be able to keep up with the, you know, with the standard of living, with the cost of living, I mean, it's not going to be where you can just sort of put everything into autopilot and let someone else, let someone else handle the mortgage payments. That's unfortunately been something that was probably okay right up until about 2010. And I won't go into the details as to why it isn't that way anymore, but a lot of it has to do with the fact that the city has been very, very behind on keeping up with the number of units built. And I'm talking about being hundreds of thousands of units behind in terms of how condos and how things like that work. So, and everything sort of trickles down. So don't be under the impression that just because you don't, you know, you might not want a condo, you know, down the street from you. Don't think that that doesn't affect a whole chain of people. So anytime someone, tries to, and of course I just sort of, you know, turn my ears off or just don't listen, tries to give me their NIMBY, not in my backyard type opinion, I just say that if you really did care about your backyard and your neighbors, you know, you would be okay with the fact that they need to build condos and not just the minimum amount. So that's a big question here. Anytime there's a condo built, there's always some uproar from someone about there's too many units and this and that and the other. So you're going to have to understand that if they don't build enough units, they've got to build twice as many buildings. I don't see how that will appease you if you're the kind of person that doesn't want 200 units, you know, in your, you know, in your community. And there's one like that going on right now in my neighborhood. I'm of the opinion that they should double it and it should be 500 units, not 200, because otherwise they're going to have to build more buildings, and it's going to take twice as long. And they're already the province, I believe, whoever might be responsible for planning what available spaces are needed, because they definitely know how many people are going to be coming in. There's predictions on how many people will be coming into Canada or in Ontario for over the next 10 years. So there's predictions for those numbers, but I don't believe the predictions for available housing spaces for those people is thought out nearly as much as that. And it needs to be. It's a big deal. So this particular person in the story has moved into a rental and then just found out, I believe it was last week, that there's going to be a 3% increase in their rental costs. This is not going to change. This is not going to be any difference for any of you who are looking at somehow stabilizing your costs. That's, I think, one of the things in retirement that you want, is to be able to somehow control the costs that you have going forward. If you are renting, you will not be in that position whatsoever. I'll say it as obvious as I can. Right now, average rents in Toronto, I believe, are about $2,300, give or take a little bit. But basically, I just say they're in the 2000s now. By the end of 2020 or early 2030, it's not a far stretch to believe that they'll be in the 3000s by then. And then as much as by 2040 to be even closer to 4000. So think about things in a 10 or 20 year format. Obviously, you can't predict the future. Some of you don't even have a career yet. Some of you are out of the job market. So it's hard to predict what's going to happen. But if you plan for success, that's really the only way to possibly have something in place. If you have a plan for it, if you fail the plan, you're essentially planning to fail. I mean, that's not something I've made up. It's just the way it is. The smartest thing you can do today is have a goal of paying down your mortgage, starting this week, starting tomorrow, starting again in 2019, and start paying down your mortgage. If you've already done that, then you're way ahead of most people and you probably won't have much of a new mortgage if you even need one. But for anybody else, you want to look at the way people look at rentals is they don't look at it as a long-term cost. You know, they look at $2,000 a month. They just see it as a monthly thing. Instead of that, look at it as $24,000 a year. Look at it as $100,000 every 4 years. So let's say for every 5 years, $100,000, is going to be what your mortgage costs are. So why not, instead of doing it that way, you'll have a mortgage in place, which again will be right now. And this is pretty much any mortgage person. I've got a few great ones, but if you've got one of your own, go ahead and talk to them. If you work out the numbers right now, you're talking about rent and mortgage not being nearly as far apart as they used to be. They used to be, and it was a very easy decision to make between renting or buying. Now, a lot of you who are paying $2,500 a month, I'll have a discussion with you that, for the most part, I believe the number is something around the 700,000 range. Could be a little bit more or less, but anyways, it's enough for a condo. Still, there's still a lot of them out there. I still do the top condos under 500,000 tours, and there's still a lot of good ones. For how long, I don't know, and a pre-construction as well. However, a lot of you are just, I guess the word is fear. You're scared of making a commitment on the long term. Now, the thing that you have to equate with the fact that if you're paying anybody's rent for a year, which is what most of you agree to, you're paying someone else's mortgage for that year. Of course, that person would have also put a deposit down for that property, whatever that might be. So yes, there's a little bit of extra money involved. Usually, to the tune of between 5 and 10% of the purchase price. So making that commitment to your own future to be able to control your costs. So over, and this is the other link that you'll see on the podcast here. It was the Owning versus Renting report done by Will Dunning last year, September 2018. It's a phenomenal report. It didn't get nearly as much press as I think it should, but it literally shows you over the period of 25 years, especially, I believe it is figure number, and I had it here, so I wanted to refer to it, I believe it's on page 51. It's table number 6. And what it says is projecting the cost of owning versus renting in Canada 25 years after the start date. So it's a really good one-page sort of review of what it would cost if you had started a mortgage, you know, 25 years ago, and then you fast forward to that date. The reason I like thinking that way is because I'm a firm, very firm believer in reverse engineering your success and your life for that matter. Again, this isn't about predicting the future. No one can do that. I mean, everything can go up, down, or sideways. Some people might not be here in 25 years. I'm not saying that this is going to be the final way to think about it, but this is the way I think you're going to need to think about it, because no one's going to be, telling you this 20 years from now. And if you do look back, and if you even listen to this podcast, which might be around 20 years from now, and you hear me out, you'll understand that what I was trying to do is set you up for a situation where instead of having your costs be, and this is in this breakdown here, having your cost of rent be approximately $4,655, which is a rent of $4,194. Plus utilities of $462 to equal $4,655, instead of a mortgage, which if you had started early enough with a mortgage breakdown of approximately $1,500 a month, because you've paid things down, you no longer have a mortgage. What you're paying is taxes, utilities, repairs, condo charges, insurance, and the rough equation here, which is just the rough approximation by the author, is approximately $1,500. So the rent, again, the difference between the rent and the mortgage ends up being in the long term approximately $3,000 a month. I don't know of anyone right now that I know that wouldn't prefer to pay $3,000 less in living expenses, especially as you get older. So think about it this way. At a certain point, you do reach, I believe it's in your 40s. In some careers, you actually reach your highest income levels. So, and some of you, it's in your 50s. I mean, hopefully you'll reach it whenever you're ready. But the statistical information is that obviously as you retire, your income doesn't go up. Of course, you might have a really good pension plan. Some of you do. A lot of us don't. So if your expenses go up as your income comes down, that is not a good end equation. You want to be able to somehow, in some way, control what your future expenses are going to be, which is why I think this should appeal just as much to someone in their 20s as it should to some of you in your 50s and 60s. Family members of mine are part of this discussion. And I talk about it every day with them. I talk about it on some levels every day with different people. And the reason why is because you need to understand, especially if you're in a position right now where you have a lot of leverage and you've built up a lot of equity in a property, you need to make sure that you can stop the clock now. And rather than wait 5 years to buy the condo you might move down to, you need to do it while you're still in the home that you're in that has the equity that can fund that purchase. And on top of that, you'll be able to stop the clock in terms of the pricing. That's the only way you can stop pricing. That's the only way you can stop pricing is by being the owner, buying the property on a certain day. And that is when the price, stops as far as what you've paid. Of course, after that, of course, anything that you're making on top of it becomes yours. And that's something as well that is exclusive to owning. You don't have any equity. You could be paying rent. Some of you have paid hundreds of thousands of dollars in rent and feel like perhaps that you're more ahead. Some of you are, because some of you have invested that money in other places and perhaps have a better return than real estate. It's unlikely that all of you have, though. I'm pretty sure that, there's some, like maybe, probably on the minority percentage side that have done that, that have invested the difference, but most of you have not. You haven't set up a plan. You haven't, done that for yourselves and made that work. The reason why mortgages, the reason why owning is such a great idea, and it's not just exclusive to Canada, but the reason why home ownership for the most part is such a good, thing for people is because it's forced savings. It's something that I've understood from day one. It's basically you're in a position where as your property grows in value, as you're paying down your mortgage, you're in a position where, you know, it's a forced savings situation. You can talk all you want about the state of the real estate market and you know, whether or not you believe in how it works. But what you need to understand is that you'll never be able to save money as fast as your property will appreciate in, you know, in value. That's just, you know, nothing's going to change as far as that goes. It's very unlikely you'll be able to save as much as many of you have made in real estate. So that's really the thing I wanted to talk about today and make sure that you guys understand that when I do my retirement boot camp sessions with you guys, who are, whether you're retiring, again, for the purposes of work, or whether you're just trying to be prepared, like, again, you're 20, maybe 30 years away from it, and you want to set up a sort of a plan to get there. You don't have to follow every part of the 10 or the 20 year plan. What you have to do is you have to at least have one, and you've got to try to stick to it and say, okay, you know, here's where we are now, here's where I want to be, and here's what I can do. And of course, yes, things will change. Relationships might change. Expenses might change along the way. Jobs will probably change, whatever. But you've got some sort of a goal, some sort of a target to go with that I believe could make the difference between you being in a good position in 2020 to have 2040 be a, you know, an easier transition at that time. So again, we're talking about the future here. We don't really know, you know, how things will change, of course, but if history's any clue, you know, the prices of cost of living and all that will all go up. So if you're prepared for it, you'll have a better chance at having a better quality of life, which is really what real estate has sort of become for me, more than anything else. It's, you know, of course it's great to have, you know, property. It's great to have a good portfolio, but, the main thing I see with people who've, you know, just invested at the right time is that their quality of life just seems to be better, in my opinion. That's all it is. It's just this author's opinion. So I see people that, you know, that have the ability, the freedom. I've got clients of mine who work 9-to-5 jobs, but have, you know, these incredible portfolios because they've invested everything, you know, they could over the years in real estate, and they've done so well that although they do work these jobs, and some of these jobs are not glamorous at all, but they have the ability to sort of not be stuck there and make a move. It's a small thing, but it actually is probably more important to a lot of you than you might want to admit. And if it is, and again, your future and everything else is important to you, I really urge you to connect with me. I've kind of just gone over the broad strokes of it here. I'm never going to go into anything that I can go into when we're working as a client and realtor relationship. And at the same time, my job, whether or not it's one of the titles that I have, is real estate wealth consultant. That's something that I really want to make sure that you have, you know, the added expertise of everything I've been doing for almost the last 20 years, to make sure that you guys understand that this is such an important thing in your life. And your first purchase is just as important as your third. And actually, in some cases, it's probably more important that you, again, do not buy the wrong place first, simply because that equity and that appreciation, like, and then there are five very specific things you should be looking for, that I review with you before you even make the purchase, to make sure that it has what you need to be able to move forward. Because it's a really bad thing if you bought in a place where you've either overpaid. And some of you have, even in the last few years, there's a few people who have, again, made that mistake. They'll, you know, go onto my website, mysoldierpart.com, ask me for a price evaluation, and I'll find out that they, you know, paid $50,000 or $100,000 more than they should have 2 or 3 years ago. So they're not going to be sitting in a very good place. My hope for you guys, those of you who've worked with me, that is that you are, you know, in a better position when you want to make that move, when you want to trade up. And everybody I've helped, you know, do that this year has definitely been on that side. So hopefully, again, you guys who are listening are ready to connect, meet up with me for a coffee or a beer, whatever works. Let's get started now. The 2020 has officially started in real estate. So as of September, most of the people who are making moves in 2020 have already signed up with me, and I hope that you're one of them. So if you are ready to get started, again, just connect with me via mysoldreport.com, let's get started. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.